Off the Ball.
GAA. Listen, honestly, I wouldn't have put Mark as the manager type. Now, Mark's been extremely, he's always been an extremely smart player, but in terms of that management role, I possibly would have seen him as a coach.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
I would say 75% of conversations I've had between since now, probably for the last week, have been maroon and white tinted.
I'd say I'm starting to even annoy people who are from Westmeath at this stage with the amount of different conversations I've had about it and the amount of different conversations I've sparked just off a whim, being like, I've thought of something.
Yeah, that's right.
So, it's been great.
Matthew was actually,
go on.
In the meeting yesterday, Matthew was actually just looking through the starting team and just ticking them off in terms of like, all right, we had Ray Kinnellan yesterday. John Heslin's up now tomorrow, and then Mark McHugh's going to join us in the evening time, and then maybe someone else from the 2014 will
figure amazing. Out.
You keep getting more and more of them on, then eventually they'll be like, sure, what about me? What about me?
So, where do I fit in? You know. It's like being part of a special club, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
It's like somebody's opened the door to conversations about stuff that, like, I know probably at this point of the week people are already, we've done an awful lot of Westmeath and people are probably fed up listening to it. But even off air, it's just amazing.
I know it is. It's not a... You're right, it's a big feeling part of something. It's strange.
Yeah.
But it's an exclusive sort of thing, because you know when you, like, it's not, it's a strange one, it's a strange comparison, but like the Prague thing that was going on, and it was such a collective like buy-in and a collective, we're all part of this and we love this. But this is like, I don't know if it's better. It's probably not better, because it's not everyone involved in it. And the more people that are involved in something, the kind of more you feel a part of something. Because it's like such an exclusive sort of thing where it's so close to home, and there's a personal thing about it, and when it's like your county's a weird, the county setup is a strange sort of dynamic where there's I'm a Westmeath man, you're a Westmeath man, I'm a Westmeath woman, you're a Westmeath woman, whatever, and we just we're all in this collective state of joy at the moment, which is rare.
It's amazing. like we're voyeurs. Right?
Yes, exactly. Isn't we haven't done enough? Anything, yes, for sure.
Like your mum is Dub.
Yeah,
my parents were west of Ireland, so I watched Gaelic games for decades through the lens of something else, and like I knew I was kind of, you know, half invested in the success of those teams on the basis of that, but it's just been incredible. Somebody was making, sorry, and we won't shut down about this now.
I might have accidentally like by saying we're not going to talk about Westmeath.
My last point on it.
The last point until Tommy comes on.
Correct. I'd probably give it about 5 minutes and we'll shoehorn another way to get it into the conversation. But the bit about after the game where, so I was there with my family, and so there wasn't an immediate path to the pub, right? There was a bit of, I was waiting for the beep, 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 so I could go, oh.
Yeah.
Franny said, the lads are meeting. Yeah. What do you think? So I had to wait for all that. But the importance of actually spending time with people who were also part of that club at that time, so you could dissect the thing high up and low down. Like, I couldn't have gone home.
Yeah, you phrased that, but that is exactly what I was trying to say in that little monologue where I didn't really say anything. That's what I meant. that's exactly what I meant. Just being around people who are in the same boat is like, if you were stuck with a lot of people who weren't feeling it would
or people who could properly or to some degree analyse the whole thing.
There is a side note to this I do want to
go on if you want to continue this chat.
There's also the Europa League final that we need to talk about, but what I will say is
what a week for Maroon.
I do expect like I kind of go through this a little bit because I have found myself being paired with a family who are absolutely non-existent when it comes to sport. Like golf makes it into the house, but outside of that, it's kind of like a small conversation about football or small conversation about rugby. And it is pretty hard when a big sporting event is happening that you care deeply about.
Yeah.
And the remedial questions start rolling in, like, what color are your team playing in? Or what do you mean they win? What do they win? They win the football, do they win the cup? And I'm like, no, it's not a cup, it's a league.
Is that it now?
It goes by points and you have to explain the system, and it's just like, takes you completely out of it.
That's so very fair point.
You do need somebody to bounce off.
You do.
It's very important.
I'm not promising anything. We'll see how we go.
We'll be back.
Is that fair enough?
Yeah.
We do the papers and use that by way of getting into our sort of main piece, which is some reflections of the Villa game last night, but we'll let you know what's happening across the back pages. By the way, if you do want to get in touch, 0879 180 180, you can leave a comment on our YouTube as well, or you can tweet us at Off the Ball. So on the papers, we're going to start with the Irish Independent today, and it's a picture of, like, it's kind of disappointing that they're not in their maroon and white jerseys. Speaking of maroon and white, not really. Galway last night winning the Fulfil Leinster under 20 hurling championship at O'Muir Park. Most of the Galway players had swapped jerseys with the Kilkenny lads, so they'd end up in these, like, inside out,
that's
what looks like a white jersey.
That's an amazing photo, actually. It's
quite similar to the Ron O'Gara walking around the Wales top in 2009.
Oh yeah, good comparison.
Yeah. Always
took a glance at that, you'd think Kilkenny won.
You would. Henry Shefflin's Kilkenny, of course.
Of course, sorry.
UEFA confirmed big shake-up in qualifying format for tournaments after 2028. There'll be a new Champions League-style format after the Euros in 28. 36 highest-ranked League A and League B. I don't want to do a Kevin Kilbanner, but, you know, we'll deal with that. We'll deal with that when it comes. Is that fair enough? We'll brush over all that. Yeah, Gibson Park urges Blues to leave final pain in past. Scrum half warns Leinster not to be weighed down by mental baggage in Bilbao. The Irish Daily Mail today: we'll bring chaos. Jally Bear's warning for Leinster ahead of the final showdown. Aston Bull is certainly up there with Tab of the Morning to you. Villa end 30-year wait for trophy with Euro Masterclass. And Sinner Saints have Spygate appeal rejected, writes Craig Hope. Southampton failing in their appeal to overturn the club's expulsion from the Championship playoff. Penal, I think it's fair enough to say. Villa outclass Freiburg to end 30-year trophy drought. And it's Buendia in the air there. Arteta gets a pay rise and a new deal by all accounts. He's suddenly in the room going, I told you so.
Mm.
Make it rain, baby. And he can name his number, can't he?
Ah, yeah, for sure.
Name his number, name his player. Sounds like that player's going to be Julian Alvarez as well.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, tasty little signing for Arsenal if they get him.
Very fun, yeah.
They're here to stay. Downey Adoubt as duo out for up to 6 weeks. Massive blow, Owen Cormack can hear in the Examiner. Massive blow for the Cork Hurlers. Appendicitis, of all the things to happen to you, like at that time of the year for Dara Fitzgibbon, like an old ankle injury or a knock me elbow or something or other, but appendicitis is an unusual one. The Sun, new deal for Arteta. Ek faces boot after Saints KO, and miracle of Aston Bull as well here. Villa clinch glory after Yuri and Emmy's stunners, which we shall get to. Villa in the stun after the 3-0 win. Emery's men end 44-year wait in spectacular style. High Tribe is that Galway reflection there. O'Neill, focus on our title. Martin O'Neill insists the achievements of Celtic's Scottish title comeback has been lost in all the furore over the pitch invasion. You wouldn't disagree, Andy?
I wouldn't disagree at all with that. In the fallout from that pitch invasion was just absolutely ludicrous, really. Look, I was on record saying that I didn't like it. I don't like seeing pitch invasions. It's the players' title. It's let them enjoy it and don't get yourselves involved in it. But the fact that Martin O'Neill had to go on TalkSport, his former employee and might be his future employee as well, you never know, and defend the idea that the referee had blown the whistle and that people should be talking about the title. I'm not saying people can't talk about the ugliness of the scenes, but it was lost in the noise that Martin O'Neill came back and won this title at the age of 74, his fourth Scottish League title, going for a double, would have potentially been on for a treble had he been allowed to take that League Cup final as well. But Nancy, in all his infinite wisdom, decided he wanted to take it. Celtic lost that game. And that has been lost in the, aren't Hearts very unlucky here, and God, people wanted Hearts to win.
Well, sure, there's your reason to get back at it again next season. But I did feel when the players came on the pitch at that stage, immediately I thought, here's the talking point. After what's been probably the most unbelievable season of all time.
What's very interesting is that people have now started to share videos of when Derek McInnes was the manager of, I think it was St Mirren, and they got promoted into the Scottish League, Scottish Premiership, and would you know it? Pitch invasion, Derek McInnes hugging all the fans,
Yeah.
Same Derek McKenna said that it was disgraceful and ugly and something should be tossed out for it.
So. Welcome to, you know, argument that doesn't suit me in football, number 4,078,000. The Mirror out of this worldy Turkish delight for Emery as Tielemans and Buendia gems sealed Euro glory, and Alvarez, that point that you made. And Alvarez is the jewel in the crown for Arteta. Irish Times, meanwhile, have the key areas where the Champions Cup final will be won and lost. Louis Bialy in the photograph there. Coman prime for big defensive effort against Leinster. It's the Bordeaux second row, and fine margins will decide Leinster's fate, says Ringrose. The Telegraph has some Villa celebrations last night. Crowning glory. Villa claim European title. Villa claim European title, fit for future king. And a picture of himself enjoying himself no end there on the bottom left-hand side.
Yeah.
I mean, every little break and play last night, we got Prince William clapping and delighting and enjoying himself. Sure, fair play to him.
I couldn't see the picture of him in that paper, and I was trying to figure out what the link between the kingdom and Matty Cash was.
Oh, that's exactly what I was thinking. He's abandoned the kingdom by starting to play for Poland or something, is it? I don't know. Yeah.
Well, he's their biggest celebrity fan, isn't he?
Yeah, no, I'm talking about Matty Cash.
Oh, yeah. He's not.
Prince William's not playing for Poland.
Princes of Europe, the Times of London leaning into this one as well. Tearful Prince William there afterwards. Like, he does, and in fairness,
he's a Villa fan.
He does seem like a genuine... He could have, in his position, you could take your pick.
Yeah.
You wouldn't pick those lads out of choice.
No, he's a Villa fan, but I don't really care about him more than I care about any other Villa fan, you know? Not that I should, or wow. I don't think anyone should, but anyway, that's beside the point. Do you want to know, hear an amazing stat? You might have already heard it. Unai Emery has now won the Europa League 5 times, I think, and all of which have been with clubs whose name contained the word Villa.
Wow.
3 times with Sevilla, 1 time with Villarreal, and now once with Aston Villa.
Did not think about that.
Mm. Someone said that to me last night, which is, I thought it was brilliant.
A brilliant way to win a final, have been so comfortable with goals of the highest quality. Like the first two absolute PlayStation goals, the third thing wasn't bad either. But the quality of execution for that, and, you know, including in our pre-show meeting, a lot of praise for the set-piece coach, who I think sometimes these lads get like 10 grand a pop or something like that whenever one of their moves come off.
Is that right? That's why they're always celebrating so much.
You'd be celebrating.
Delighted, yeah.
Depending on the club, I'm sure. Terms and conditions apply. Fee may vary depending on conditions. But having said all of that, like the quality of the little pinged pass for the first and the quality of the execution. I'm not saying like that the set piece coach, Austin McPhee, doesn't deserve a tip of the cap for what went on, but it shouldn't dominate the conversation as much as the quality of the execution. Where his foot ends up after he strikes the ball. He almost looks like he's half grinning at it as he strikes it.
It's a pure Tielemans strike. Like he does have that in his locker. We saw that in the FA Cup final as well.
Yeah, against Chelsea.
Absolute.
He scored a cracker against Everton, I think. I remember one Saturday evening a couple of years ago as well. Just the trajectory of it, like just real aesthetic.
Beautiful.
Even the one last night I was looking at, as it was coming through the air, I was kind of going, you know, it's one of them where it's like halfway through the air and you're going, hit it.
He's
going
to bang it.
And he absolutely
But how many times do you see a player hit that? It scuffs off the ground, it goes 10 miles right, it goes more often than not 100 miles over the bar. But like to have gone through traffic, and there's a bit of luck that's involved with that, but you know, and it wasn't quite exactly bottom corner, but it was beautiful.
Mm. Supposedly, sorry, Luke is flagging here that I stole that stat from Dara. I actually didn't know Dara said it a few weeks ago, but I'll credit him with it. He can have it. Anyway, sorry.
I do tend to agree. I think maybe it's oversold. Look, the margins are so small in these games and at this level of football. But even like he's getting praise for the set piece last night. He got a lot of praise for the set piece against Liverpool as well on Friday night. Mm. Both were similar to each other. John McGinn actually said after the game that this was a ploy on the Liverpool one. But if you look back at them, they're incredibly simplistic ideas. Like it's not as if it's like this intrinsic thing that there's 10 different moves to. It's a short corner that is returned to the corner kicker who flights it over to the back post, and then obviously you have blockers in the box blocking the defender from getting out or making decoy runs. But it's not as if this is like the Russian ballet where there's orchestrated, like it's...
Well, I think it was the decoy runners was the specific bit of, you know, you run over there, they'll all follow you. They're not watching you coming from downtown.
I think there's a lot to be said for when you choose to do it and when you choose to use it as well, and the corners that precede it and go after it too. I remember Arsenal a couple of weeks ago in the Newcastle game for Eze's brilliant goal, tried the exact same thing three times, and the fans were turning on them being like, what are you doing? Come on, like, put it in the mixer. And they tried it one more time and it worked. So there's persistence there with it, and there's a time to throw it in and a time to try one of these things out. And I would imagine that's a pre-planned situation where it's not a, we try this now. It's probably on the fourth corner we're going to do this, because on the third corner we did this. But I would give him credit for it. But at the same time, it's the same thing with everything. You give a manager credit, but it's the players on the pitch who go out and put it all into play. And the Tielemans goal is exceptional. And as you mentioned, a very Tielemans-esque goal. And I think the exact same thing can be said for Remy Buendia's goal. If you were to say, what type of goal, if Buendia is going to score a worldie, what's it going to look like? I think that's pretty much exactly what happened last night. So, and it's rare in a final. Maybe it's not rare in a final, but at least to your head, you think finals, a little bit scrappy, which the game sort of was for the first 44 and a half minutes. The quality doesn't always shine through in the games that the most people are watching, which tends to be finals. But that did happen last night for those two goals, which was great to watch. And I'm delighted for Villa personally. I think they're a good club.
We should mention that it was a disappointing final for the neutral. Like, Freiburg were disappointing. They were.
After the Villa goal.
Yeah.
After the first
they
Villa
folded
goal.
Up. Folded up. Yeah. Didn't help that they had Paddy the Hooligan playing, playing for them. Yeah. It's on pop up on the screen at one point.
That was my thoughts too.
Yeah.
I did think it was interesting, just to stick with the set piece course for a minute, that his name's Austin McVie, by the way. He's a Scottish coach. And what's more interesting for this is the credit that the players give him as well, because as you say, like, these set pieces live or die on the quality of the players on the pitch and their ability to execute them. But John McGinn was actually speaking after the game, and one of the first people he credits with this Europa League title is Austin McVie.
Well, I don't think we started the game pretty well, but what we do is we've got a great set-piece coach. I'm a bit biased, but Austin McVie. We set up like the Liverpool corner and tried to deceive them a bit, and it worked. And I think that gave us a breakthrough to relax and play our football, and thankfully after that we did. I was back because we did it obviously against Liverpool at the weekend, but brilliant blocks for the boys, and Yuri's got great quality to find a goal.
So that was John McGinn speaking on TNT after the game. That was the second question.
That's pretty remarkable.
Starts to give credit to Austin McVie. Austin McVie, you might recognise him from the touchline. Long hair.
Yeah, he's a distinct figure.
Looks a bit Nordic. He's actually Scottish. He has had not a glittering career by any means in terms of the clubs that he's been at. He started off at Cowdenbeath.
Yeah, Cowdenbeath.
Then you have St Mirren. I remember, I was thinking when I saw him on the touchline before, I was like, I know that face, I know that hair from somewhere, but I couldn't pinpoint where it was. He was at St Mirren and he was at Hearts for a long time as well. He was assistant for Michael O'Neill as well at Northern Ireland when they went on that magnificent run. Then he also worked with Steve Clarke, and look at what Steve Clarke that has done with Scotland over the last couple of years. He's now working for Portugal. He's going to be at the World Cup with Roberto Martinez and Ronaldo and co. And he also worked at Michelin as well as a set-piece coach. So he sort of plotted himself around very interesting and intelligent managers and clubs over the last number of years. So I would tend to lean towards more. I don't like giving these people too much credit because...
Set piece coaches here.
Your fourth or fifth coach in the coaching system, like, how big of an impact are they actually having beyond what the players and the manager are doing? But in this case, I always look at who's hiring him, and smart men and smart clubs have hired this guy.
Mm.
So he clearly has a little bit about him that goes beyond the realms of what a second or third impact coach can have.
And you'd wonder as well, because I remember when we had Brian Mbeumo was in Kildare a couple of months ago for the training camp that Man United were doing, and we asked him about Keith Andrews and Nathan Collins, obviously, as well, who when Keith was obviously the set-piece coach at Brentford when Mbeumo was there. And obviously talked about him working on the set pieces and how good at that he was, but also the fact that he had the license to sort of motivate players and he was good at doing that and the players bought into it. And because these guys, probably more so than some of the other coaches, are having direct conversations, direct impact, direct involvement in the trainings for a prolonged period of time, because you know how important set pieces are, you can see why someone like John McGinn will credit Austin McPhee, because in a final, the first goal is always key, as cliche as that is. And the weight that would have been lifted off Aston Villa's shoulder scoring that goal, which was directly from a set piece, essentially, was huge.
Yeah. I wonder, are they having a moment, as they say in football, the old set piece coaches? And
it's a prolonged moment.
It is a prolonged moment, to be fair.
It's happened for a while now.
Yeah.
I am surprised that nobody in the back pages went with a Nanny McPhee reference.
First thing that came to my head, to be honest with you, when you mentioned his name.
Villa is quite a punnable word, you know. You
could Istanbul. Aston,
like, there's a lot to work
the
with
the Istanbul
there.
Aspect of it.
They're all sort of British papers. Yeah. You know, you've got the royal family involved.
Unai Emery has had a bit of an arc this season, hasn't he? It started off as a, God, this guy's brilliant. Real Madrid, whenever they look to replace Xabi Alonso / whoever the hell is it, Arbeloa, whoever you're having yourself, this guy will be in the mix. Then it all sort of tapered off mid-season, but he's back, baby, and he's top. We're back in a position where Aston Villa are doing well now to keep him, and the bigger clubs will be sniffing around.
Yeah.
The bigger clubs, he says, in the morning of Villa winning a major trophy.
Aston Villa are a big
insulting
club.
Villa fans everywhere.
Aston Villa are a big club.
Like teams would do very well to get him. Manchester United would do very well to get him. Obviously, there's a lot of these clubs have been sorted now. They've picked who they wanted.
Mm.
I think he'd be mad to go. I think it's actually a perfect fit. He's pretty much free reign of what he wants to do there. He's made a lot of signings. A lot of them haven't worked, but he's still allowed to make them. He's brought great success. He's got Villa back up to the top table. Whether it's the top table, that remains to be seen. But they're back up at the top table. And I think it's perfect for him. I don't know why he'd want to go. Unless he had a grow to go back to Spain, or he'd a grow to take on one of, you know, the Champions League contenders. But he's already done Paris Saint-Germain, and that didn't really work out too well.
Mm.
So Bayern Munich is left, and they're not looking for a manager. He's not going to be going to Real Madrid, Barcelona, possibly if you went back to Spain, I'm not sure, but I think it's a perfect fit for all around. I think Aston Villa is in such an incredibly good position at the minute. Obviously, the financial stuff is a little bit of a nuisance for them, I suppose, but you can work around that. Yeah. You can work around that. I don't think he'd be going anywhere. I think he'd be mad to go somewhere, to be honest. I think it's been perfect for him after the kind of rough couple of years that he did end up having, somewhat outside of his own control, really. Obviously could have done better at Arsenal, but it was a poison chalice going in there after Arsene Wenger. If Mikel Arteta had gone in there straight after Arsene Wenger, the same thing would have happened.
Mm.
Arteta got more patience off the back of Emery not getting that patience, I feel. And that's not to credit him for doing badly at a club, but I think the Emery Villa fit is quite nice.
It's hard to know if he's better at doing the job at a club like Aston Villa, where, like, you know, if you look at the clubs he brought to the Europa League, like Sevilla, Villarreal, Aston Villa, like these are clubs that needed work and weren't expected to be at the top table, and he's able to work miracles with players that he can influence quite strongly, whereas he goes into a major club and I feel like he doesn't have that influence. He doesn't have the impact that he can have because superstars won't listen to him as much as sort of that mid to high level player would listen to him. Like these Aston Villa players, they're good players, but they're not superstars.
Mm.
Like there's not one probably player in that Aston Villa dugout that you could say, yeah, he could go into a top club and be their best player. But as a collective, he's able to make these really elite players play to a level that is good enough to win a European title, not a Champions League title.
Like, it's not as if he's working with a bunch of chumps, but you'd say that winning the Europa League and finishing fourth, let's say, in the Premier League is probably slightly above par, as in he's got he's at the very least got the most out of the group that he has.
Totally, yeah. I'm not doing down what he has achieved by any stretch, or saying that the Aston Villa team are nobodies, but more so what I mean is they're like, he's not what he really struggled with at PSG, and I suppose other managers have since struggled with that until Luis Enrique came in and threw them out. But he struggled with the superstar personalities in the dressing room. He didn't have that ability, and sometimes you do see that with managers who are really good managers, and in Unai Emery's case, really good coaches, that a lot of the top elite superstar players do not want to be coached that much, and he can't have success without coaching his team to the nth degree. So I think that's sort of where I would have him, in that he's an elite level coach, but whether he's an elite level manager is probably the question that he hasn't answered in his career. But it, I mean, it's still an extraordinary achievement. I don't want to take that away from what Aston Villa have done.
He has won the Europa League 5 times with different clubs.
The 3-in-a-row thing was mental as well, wasn't it? That means they won it, went into the Champions League, came third in their group, won it, and did the same thing again the next season. Well, obviously that can never, I was going to say that'll be hard to repeat, but it can't be done now because of the new format. I know what you mean.
I think I would like to see Emery at a club, say like Chelsea, for example, who he can go in and stamp his authority and coach a team that he can spend some money on as well. Whereas at a United or a Real Madrid or a PSG or Man City, I think that's where he runs into problems, in that the expectation is always going to be there to win a Champions League title. Whereas I think if he went to Chelsea, for example, the expectation is probably not to immediately win a Champions League, but I think he could do that in a year.
But I think there's a lot of those clubs that are basket cases to begin with, right? So you're actually fighting against, so your ability is not necessarily reflected, as we might see with Enzo Maresca, depending on how events pan out over the next while, but your ability is not necessarily reflected because you're in a basket case of a club to begin with. And like, people tend to reflect badly on your time there because for various reasons, like you say, personalities, club hierarchy, things didn't work out. I think oftentimes you're better off just saying that's actually not a reflection of the manager. That's the club is a total basket.
Arsenal, somewhere like Liverpool, is
somewhere that has been in my head since we've been chatting about this, that that could be a decent fit.
Yeah.
Would Liverpool fans have him?
I don't know if his style of play would necessarily suit what Liverpool fans expect.
Yeah.
But, I mean, fans will have success.
Yeah.
No matter what.
And then get tired of that season later and want the manager out.
Well, I think the key point of Arne Slot is he's not having success this year.
No.
So, what have you done for me lately is more what football fans do. But we do have some Unai Emery from the start of his Aston Villa career, and I think that's probably important context today when we're looking back, that Aston Villa were not in a good position when, speaking of basket cases, like Aston Villa were not in a good position where when Unai Emery took over, they were potential relegation candidates.
Oh yeah, they were heading one way under Steven Gerrard.
Yeah, if they didn't steer the ship away from what they were at. And Unai Emery came, he was announced to the press, and he set up what he wanted to achieve at Aston Villa at this stage.
First, good afternoon, everybody. And I want to thank Mr. Nassef, Mr. Edens, and Christian and Johan. My dream is to win a trophy with Aston Villa. It's my personal challenge at the beginning. And my second dream, or my objective, could be to play with Aston Villa in Europe.
Well, there you go. Win a trophy and play with Aston Villa in Europe. He has done both those things. I did think it was interesting at the start of that how he started the press conference with good afternoon. Because if you recall, the meme that Unai Emery became during his time at Arsenal was the good evening stuff, and his lack of English skills, or not even lack of English, he could speak English, he just couldn't say good evening. But I think, I don't know, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it seemed to me like that was a purposeful good afternoon, and he was almost killing off that version of Unai Emery, reborn after his success with Villarreal, and announcing himself as, this is a new me.
Either that, or it was 1 o'clock in the day.
There's also that. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I do think there was very much an element where Unai Emery was casting off the ghosts of the past and saying, no, like, I am a top level coach. I didn't have the luck that I wanted with Arsenal, but doubt me at your peril.
Very likeable manager, isn't he? Always has been. Like, the whole background to the good evening thing was that he had made a deliberate effort to go out of his way to be polite. That's, you don't see that. Like, it just doesn't happen.
Well, not in an authentic way that it seems to be with him.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Liam Senior did it. He shook the hand of every man and woman in the media room.
Mm.
But that came off very false.
Poor old Liam, yeah.
Yeah.
That was more like high performance
nonsense, yeah.
As opposed to just being nice.
Yeah. No, yeah. I think I would tend to agree with you. And I would like the thought of him going into somewhere new and saying good afternoon as opposed to good evening. I really hope that's what he was doing because I like that. But we are probably guilty, especially in modern football, of overanalyzing everything. And that might be what we're doing here. But the thought of him deciding the thought of him deciding to do that is admirable. And he's an admirable guy. I think, doesn't he own? He owns some portion of a club back home in Spain.
Oh, does he?
Third of your, yeah, I think maybe his brother runs it or something. He seems like a good fella. And I can see why, regardless of whether they went and won last night, why Aston Villa fans are very much having him.
A long time between drinks, as a lot of the papers are pointing out, obviously, for Villa, who are now, have moved from top club to a top club, but not yet quite a top club, or are still a top club, or not at all a top club.
I think they're a top club without being a top club.
And who else would be in that top category? I suppose that'd be the kind of.
I suppose you're looking at clubs with legacy. I always think that, like, I would have Aston Villa as the club that Tottenham think they are, in that Aston Villa are a club built on success of the past, massive fan base. Great stadium, great manager, and deserve a place at the top table and are deservedly fighting for that, whereas Tottenham thought they could get that by just building a new stadium and saying they're a top club. Whereas I think Aston Villa, Everton are probably a top club without being a top club. Maybe Aston Villa are like that weird too good for the top.
Would you have Villa, Everton and Forest in the same category?
I would have, in terms of what type of club they are, I think that's the vibe I would go for, in terms of it shouldn't be all that surprising when they go on to have success.
Yeah.
Because there's a legacy of success there.
Yeah.
And not that necessarily guarantees your success in the future.
There's an endless tail to the Forest. Like, as Forest, you know, you mention Forest to any 12, 13-year-old, they're probably like, oh, yeah. Premier League club, but wouldn't really go much beyond that.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, a club that would probably consider themselves to be top, but I think for people of, can I include all of us in the same age cohort for one brief moment?
There's about three different generations in this room, but sure.
People of our age, lads.
Sure. Guys like us.
You know, Man City is never really going to be a top club for me.
See, and then it comes into what you're saying there about a 12 or 13-year-old Forest, whatever, Premier League club, grand. 12 or 13-year-old Manchester City.
Oh, elite.
Yeah. Strange.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, it is. It really is. Yeah, that's a worrying sign.
It really depends on what happens with these charges, because,
it does.
I mean, if Man City are found guilty and the punishment meets the crime, then there's a chance that Man City could be not even a small club by the end of it. Depending on how that ends up. And, you know, if they're stripped of their titles as a result of it, then all of that goes as well. And, yeah, I don't know. I don't think, again, the legacy of Man City is yet to stand the test of time.
Yeah. I think Peter Trainor is saying here that it's a little unfair to Villa to have them in the same category as Everton and Forest. I think I would have them probably at the top of that category.
Villa, yeah.
Firmly on the top of that category, yeah.
Multiple European trophies.
And Finbar Furious is not having our top metric. He's wondering, how has it come to this?
Ah, listen, we're facetiously using that phraseology as a barometer of, what's good and what's not. So don't.
Carlinho is flying the flag for Everton here. What you're all forgetting is that Everton are one of the legacy clubs that formed the Premier League. We have more trophies than Villa and Forest. We have been a sleeping giant for decades. But according to him, that's changing.
I don't know if we're forgetting that. I think we're firmly adding them in the list of Aston Villa, Forest, and being in the club of, like, the the same echelons as clubs that have done it in the past, won European trophies, won Premier League trophies, or not Premier League trophies, but English Football League trophies, and, you know, are still very much a legacy club in the Premier League. Bobby Dwyer is not happy with me. I know Bobby's a big Spurs fan.
He is.
But it'll be an interesting situation when both Spurs and Arsenal fans accuse me of being biased against both their clubs.
Yeah.
And I will admit, some of my Tottenham dislike, I would say, is down to their treatment of Ange Postecoglou, which, I mean, it might come, their chickens might come home to roost this weekend. So we'll wait and see what size of club Tottenham are if they do end up in the Championship.
Leeds getting a lot of mentions here too. Leeds probably fall into that as well, I'd say.
They'd be on an Aston Villa level.
I think they would be.
Yeah.
There's an intangible nature to how you categorise these clubs, isn't there? And I think there's a lot of thing about the area and the following and the stadium, and then obviously the history too. And then I think actually
players,
like the cultural sort of impact, which is something that's hard to weigh up.
If there's anybody watching us this morning who's familiar with the technology of a Dell, I'd be open to your feedback about how I can turn my mouse pad on.
that's what
I'm trying to look up what the shortcuts are here, but none of them are working for me. I've tried the function F5, F7, and
not F8, working.
And it ain't happening. So,
is that laptop top, or?
Well, just it's at the minute it's whatever beneath the top. But you have your Man United's, right, and
go
your
on.
Liverpool's and your Barcelona's
go
and your
on.
Madrid's.
Yeah.
You know, I think you're beneath that. You're going for your City's and your PSG's and your Bayern's. I mean, that even that last one might be a touch controversial in there.
Yeah.
There are layers to this. I'm just trying to figure out where Villa come into all that, but maybe it's not the morning to be disparaging.
Dermot Sheehan reckons you need to reboot it.
I've tried that. if you've been watching about three times, so
turn it off and turn it back on again.
No, it's just stuck in the middle of the screen, and it ain't happening. So, yeah, important piece of information to point out, and you know.
So, if anything remotely out of the ordinary happens between now and the end of the show,
you'll understand that I'm flying solo here. We did want to talk. Are we done on Villa? Like the quality of the goals.
Yeah, the goals are amazing. Yeah.
That perfect emoji. PlayStation stuff.
Congratulations to them.
Yeah, fair play. Eason Assay was on later on. I was reminding myself a little bit about him. Haven't covered rugby a lot during his years at Leinster. There's the whole story about how he ended up here at all. He had played for Fiji, born and brought up in New Zealand, had made one appearance for Fiji at a World Cup because he was called in, I think, possibly his injury cover later on. That one appearance basically resulted in him coming here at all. If he'd still been qualified for New Zealand, he probably would have stayed with Auckland and never would have brightened our door. But brighten our door he did, and in some fashion. I'm not sure there's been a more... I think if we were to talk about the most complete rugby players to have ever played the game in this country and well beyond, he'd be in that conversation. He had absolutely everything from... like, you just so rarely see a player who's able to, as he did in the Champions Cup final in Bilbao, kick two place kicks. Now, they were fairly straightforward.
Yeah.
But as we saw from Gary Ringrose in this year's semi-final, they're not always that straightforward when the chips are down, and they very much were in that game. His read of a game, his fielding, kicking out of hand, his offload, his line running, and then you throw in an ability to tackle as well. Like, just one of the most complete players we've ever seen, and I'm really looking forward to chatting to him later on.
Do you have any idea what he did, between, according to here, as I'm reading, he had two stints at Leinster.
He did, so he went off, he kind of retired from rugby a little bit,
yeah.
And he went back to Auckland to take on some sort of a coaching role. I'll ask him what the details are when he's on, but it was some sort of a coaching role, and obviously must have just got the itch, or Leinster had the need, or maybe both, and back he came.
Returning to Auckland Blues as mental skills coach
there you
for
go.
The 2014 Super Rugby season.
But he's not, from what I can see, gone on to do any kind of coaching subsequently, which is interesting.
Mm. We can ask him.
Yeah.
I don't know if you caught the breakfast buffet yesterday, Adrian, the launch of a brand new segment on the show.
Nice.
Where we get stuck into all different types of topics. And Dara brought up the multi-positional players, actually, as an interesting talking point, and how a lot of positions in rugby are now becoming probably non-specialised, that there's a lot of multitaskers that can do a lot of different things. And maybe the the players who are elite at one skill, maybe that skill of being elite at one skill is kind of gone from the game. But it sounds to me like you're describing Issa Nasebe as like an ultra-modern player in that period where he could do everything. And that was kind of few and far between.
Teams would kill for him now. He's that type of a quality of player, and also like his ability to play. Like, he would have played a lot of his games at 11 for Leinster. He would have played at fullback. He definitely played at centre at a certain point. Like, he could play out half. Like Kieran Frawley, in terms of the dynamism of, you know, where he can play on a pitch, like absolute utility. But never, like oftentimes you see, and Kieran Frawley is a really good example of that, like a player can pay the price in any sport for the versatility, because they're a bit of a, sure, listen, they'll cover all sorts of spots, so we leave them on the bench. But he was certainly not a bench player. And like, also, the other thing about it is that you hear all of his former teammates, whenever his name comes up in conversation, they absolutely adored him. You know, a George Best type of rugby, like...
That's a big call.
Elite quality. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, James Tracy couldn't say enough about him last week. The same sort of thing about such a leader that he was, but also being like the last guy. He's a leader by nature, but a leader kind of, you're back.
Sorry.
You're back.
Little air punch there because I'm back in the game.
Yeah, but how good he was with the younger players coming through and leading by example, as well as actually leading by talking and all that sort of stuff as well. Like, as you talk about him being an all-rounder on the field.
But when you'd see him score a try,
also seems like an all-rounder in the dressing room too, you know?
He'd never smile too much, or certainly not over-celebrate a try whenever he'd score.
Yeah.
Like, it was always very muted, and he'd be sort of, do you remember the old school sort of 60s, 70s football clips that you see, and player scores a goal, at the very most they're getting a handshake, but they're very much back out the pitch again. That was kind of him, like, get on with business. Now, I know Leinster particularly made in latter years, I think possibly under the later years of Stuart Lancaster, had made much more of a deal of celebrating tries, like we should do this because it feeds into the overall morale of things. But he was definitely not a man for that. Score the try, get the hell out of Dodge.
Yeah.
Something in that as well.
Yeah.
For sure.
Sometimes you need somebody who acts like that. Roy Keane would probably agree with.
Yeah.
He would. Sentiment. He'd be very much a Roy Keane player. That's great. And of course, as we know, this is the benchmark for anything that's sound in society.
Is he a rare breed of player? Are there players like him now, would you say?
Probably not a pile. Mm. With the versatility and the ability to be so good at so many things.
Yeah.
It's so rare. Like... Mm. Particularly, like, I think everything else, the reason I made a point of it earlier on, I think everything else can come in the package of a player. Like, he also had unbelievable pace, like, not a million miles away from Bielbieri, in fact, but the tackling bit is the thing, that you can have all of those other things. But his bravery, like, he put himself in front of, I saw him tackling Chabal in one of the things I was looking at last night, Sebastian Chabal, all 7 foot. 14 inches of him, and he's in a say, well, like, didn't have the obvious physicality to be taken on a player like that. I'd be fascinated to know, Leinster fans or beyond, who have memories of him, get your comments in or get your questions in from later on, because he's definitely, and like, listen, here, sorry, also, you're absolutely always nostalgic for an era of success. So there's 100% a bit of that.
Absolutely.
A bit of blue tinted glasses about it, but equally I do think that he passes mustard.
Well, it was interesting to hear that it goes kind of unseen that Leinster haven't had European success since he was at the club.
Yeah.
Which is, that sounds insane when you consider the success that Leinster have had elsewhere. So I wonder, is there something in the lack of, what are Leinster lacking at the minute that Leinster team had in 2019? Like, was it just a matter of, like, I mean, that Leinster team was outrageous when you go down the list of players, but like Issa Nasebe, like, is this Leinster team missing an Issa Nasebe? That
every team now is missing an Issa Nasebe. Any team would miss an Issa Nasebe.
Maybe the intrinsic.
Well, even in terms of that, like, listen, mentality monsters is the obvious thing. Your boys obviously got that at the end of the weekend. Liverpool have had it previously, but they were that before such an expression existed. And like, it is the thing that, and until Leinster get over the line, it'll always be the thing that gets leveled against them until Ireland get over the line, or whatever the hell that would be in a Rugby World Cup context. that'll always be levelled at them. But there was definitely, I mean, you look across the team, certainly the Nasiwas, Horgans, O'Driscoll, absolute quality. Do tell me where we're off to or what we have to do here, because, you know, while I'm still getting back to speed here with this thing,
We are going to move on to Tommy, because Tommy is actually on the line. So we're going to be talking about talking to Easton Aseba later on the show. We're going to have Matt Slater later again at 9:15. He's going to be actually telling us some detail about the Southampton Spygate case that's ongoing and seems to be developing every couple of minutes.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Off the Ball. GAA.
Honestly, I wouldn't have put Mark as the manager type. Now, Mark's been extremely, he's always been an extremely smart player, but in terms of that management role, I possibly would have seen him as a coach.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.